Welcome in to the newest edition of the Just In Time Sports Podcast. I am your owner and host, Justin Jackson. And in this week's episode, we'll be discussing the NBA playoffs as we are barreling closer to the NBA Finals, which gets started on June 6th. We will also be talking about the WNBA and what's happening there. We will also have a little bit of video game talk and our best for last. Now, as always, don't forget to like, rate, and subscribe to the Just In Time Sports Podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And of course, don't forget to follow the social media handle at JTime Sports. I repeat, at JTime Sports for all of your breaking news updates and coverage. Now, as always, don't forget to sit back and get ready to learn something.
JTS. Yeah. Just In Time Sports.
Life is good. Life is good.
Look. This is Just In Time Sports. Come and get your weekly takes. His opinion from the heart. He can never show you fake. If you winning or you losing, he gon' tell it to you straight. How we talking basketball without a Jordan Brown debate? If you got the hottest takes, you better come and make your case. If you win a couple games, he might even show you grace. JTS on every platform, we grow the adaptation. Numbers going off the charts, we create the separation. Louisiana till I die is where I'm from, I can't replace it. So people minds are obtuse, but I like to be adjacent. Giving my opinion like I'm Nick Ryder, I'm Jason. ESPN, better watch out, cause I'm coming for the spaceship. We even tweeting on Twitter, you can meet us in the spaces. Highlight clips of sports news, yeah, you gotta embrace it. We never had it easy, we just came from the pavement. I might be controversial, but I like to make my statements. This is Just In Time Sports, come and get your weekly takes. His opinion from the heart, he can never show you fake.
He can never show you fake. He can never show you fake.
If you winning or you losing, he gon' tell it to you straight.
He gon' tell it to you, he gon' tell it to you, he gon' tell it.
This is Just In Time Sports, come and get your weekly takes.
Come and get it.
He gon' tell it to you straight, to you straight.
Welcome into the show. These are my favorite shows to do. You get them a lot during the summer, as you guys know, because I do teach. I do coach high school football currently. So as you guys know, this summertime is when you get a lot of what I call my Insta-release shows, where I record them. As soon as I get the editing done, they're out to the public. And usually it's cut from a sense of urgency. Usually in the summertime, there's games on that night or so on and so forth. But we actually are in an off night because Oklahoma City Thunder have already taken care of business. Once again, they have eliminated somebody very quickly. But as we're going to get started with, so we're going to have a little NBA talk, a little WNBA talk. We'll have probably some NFL pop in there at some point. It's not necessarily in the rundown. However, I'm an NFL guy. I'm a football guy. So I'm sure it'll pop up in there at some point. So I'm just giving you guys a fair warning in case it does. But our schedule is the NBA, WNBA, and CFB 26 will be our best for last because the trailer dropped yesterday along with some community notes. I'll actually be a little bit of scheduling news for me. I'll actually be on the Nerdology podcast with CL Smooth Gaming. So if you guys have watched the YouTube channel, the YouTube show JTS at the Dark on the IMS production channel, when we did our mock draft, CL Smooth was actually on the stream. He was a big Saints fan on the stream. I'll be on his podcast tonight on the Nerdology podcast discussing all things CFB 26 among some other things as well. So make sure you guys tune into that, and I'll actually give my personal notes here, and then I'll talk with him a little bit more and see what he's feeling, like I said, on his show tonight. But the Oklahoma City Thunder have already advanced to the NBA Finals. So, and honestly, maybe doing football early. Hold on. Okay. So, actually, a little bit of breaking news. Brian Huff is heading to the San Francisco 49ers in exchange for a mid-round pick. They're working through restructuring Huff's contract in order for the deal to go through. But I told you, football was bound to come into the show somehow. I didn't know how, but it popped in. And that is how. So Bryce Huff, is being moved from the Philadelphia Eagles to the San Francisco 49ers in exchange for a mid-round pick. So we have our first interceding of breaking news into the show. That tends to happen from time to time. I'm actually live tweeting this as we speak. So you guys will know exactly when I record this show today, because the tweet will come out at the same time that I'm telling you guys this news. So again, Bryce Huff from the Philadelphia Eagles to the San Francisco 49ers in exchange for a mid-round pick. The deal cannot be finalized, however, until June 1st due to league rules, but he is headed that way. And they will be dividing salaries, with the Eagles taking on about $9 million and the Niners taking on about $7 million of the salary. Always interesting when those two teams do that. To me, it shows a very strong motivation to get rid of a guy if I'm willing to pay you $9 million and not play for me. But also, that probably shows that he was potentially going to get cut, and they're kind of doing him a solid by allowing him to do that. So he had 17 fully guaranteed. They restructured his deal. So the Eagles are paying $9 million, just over $9 million, and the Niners are paying just under $8 million to get to his full 17 still. So yeah, the Eagles and the Niners are finalizing that trade. All right, so back to what I originally was going to talk to. I told you guys, football just appears in this show. But yeah, congratulations to the Oklahoma City Thunder, and they have clinched the Western Conference as they will advance to the NBA Finals. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, after another great series, actually was not his best series, but no one in Oklahoma City besides him played individually that much more amazing. And he was able to win the Western Conference Finals MVP. And Oklahoma City Thunder advanced to their first NBA Finals since 2012. This team has been absolutely dominant. They're on a very short list of teams to win 80 games in a season. Why is that a hard thing to do? Because in order for you to do that, you have to win probably 65-ish games in the regular season. Or they're on the team with the ability to win 80 games, I should say. You got to win 64, at least 64 regular season games and the title. Right? Because if you do 63 or less, you will never get to 80, because it's four times. You're going to win 16 games in the playoffs. So if you do 63 or less wins, you can never get to 80. So them being a 64-plus win regular season team, they have the ability now to join a very short list of 80-win teams ever. You have the 73-win Bulls. You have the 72-10 Bulls. You have the 73-9 Warriors. There's a couple of 68-win teams in there. I think it's like five teams that ever win 80 games in a season. Plus, you have to take the Warriors out if you do teams that won the title, because that 73-9 Warriors team was the famous 3-1 comeback for LeBron. Now, they ultimately won, I believe, 84-ish games, 85-ish games, something like that. Almost 90 games, but they ultimately lose in the finals, so they're not even relegated as one of the greatest teams of all time because of losing in the NBA finals. But this Oklahoma City Thunder team is one of the greatest teams by wins to ever play basketball. However, I must apologize to them. And I must apologize to them for being unable to see the forest for the trees. I came in a few weeks ago and I was banging the table. Man, the NBA, unless the Nuggets or Celtics win, this is going to be a historic title. This is going to be a title that is unlike any other title in NBA history. This is going to be a title that, outside of the Pistons, I kept the Pistons perfect point, outside of the Pistons in 2003, the 03 Pistons, this is a title that is unknown in modern NBA history, where you don't either have the clear-cut best player, or a guy you can make the argument for, two of the top 10, or three of the top 20. Five. Now, Dirk is the title everybody sticks out. And my response every time is, if you find a way to beat the Oklahoma City Thunder with Kevin Durant and the Big Three, you have a chance. I mean, Kevin Durant, the Big Three. You also turn around and you beat Kobe Bryant and the Lakers, who had just won back-to-back titles. Right? So that team was no slouch. And you turn around and you beat the Big Three Miami Heat. you got an argument, especially when you're easily the best player on the team. So they beat the Portland Trailblazers. Okay. And then they sweep the Lakers out. That's the famous Andrew Bynum series. Then they beat OKC in five, and they turn around and beat the Heat in six. Yeah, you got an argument for the best player in the world in my book if you pull those off in consecutive runs, right? And so Dirk's title, I think, goes into the best player in the world category. At that moment, in the middle of June, Dirk Nowitzki was the best player in basketball. How can you argue he wasn't? He beat everybody that was a challenger. At the time, it was Kobe, LeBron, KD was like the big three in the NBA. Duncan as well was a baller. But those three were the big three in the NBA. Dirk beat two of them. Dirk beat all three in one playoff run. And no one went past six games. I kind of can't, you know what I'm saying? It's an argument to be had that Dirk was the best player in the world. I wouldn't make it, but you can have the argument. So he fits. Again, that Pistons team in 04 was an outlier team. They had a bunch of all-stars that year. They remind me of the Atlanta Hawks team. They had the five all-stars, and everybody knew they weren't that good at football. I mean, sorry, they weren't that good at basketball. But they were, you know, they were really good at basketball. The Pistons finished the job. It was a weird year in the NBA. The Lakers ended up making it back to the finals that year. But Karl Malone was out. That was when the Lakers got all the old heads. When they had Karl Malone, Gary Payton, that crew. Karl Malone was had missed the whole season pretty much. Gary Payton had missed the whole season pretty much. Kobe was limping around. Shaq was gaining weight left and right. Like, and they went to the finals 4 years in a row. Now, put to perspective, LeBron went to the finals like 9 years in a row or 8 years in a row. Put into a little perspective. But, hey, some people don't get credit that others get. Anyway, so I always went, but anyway, back to what my original point was, I always kind of pointed to this year being unconventional because the Nuggets had the best player in the world, Jokic. Boston, you could do two of the top 10 with Tatum and Brown, but you can definitely give me three of the top 25 with either Tatum, Brown, and White, Tatum, Brown, and Drew, Tatum, Brown, and White, or Tatum, Brown, and Drew, because you could tell me three of the top 25. Probably Tatum, Brown, and White is your three of the top 25. You can argue two of the top 10 with Brown and Tatum, but for sure, Tatum, Brown, and Derrick White was your three of the top 25. Easily, right? I was short-sighted. I always said Oklahoma City didn't achieve. I said, Shea's not the best player. I dismissed J-Dub. I dismissed Lou Dort. I dismissed Chet Holmgren. I said, okay, this is going to be a weird title. This reminds me of the 70s. And I actually went and looked. This title is going to be more weird than the 70s because the 70s at least had a couple of stars pop up in there. Like Kareem Abdul-Jabbar won a title in the 70s. He was the best player on planet Earth. And they didn't only the 70s only had six different champions or five different champions. This is going to be the seventh champion for the seventh year in a row. So the 2020s have had five different champions. That's even in the 70s that didn't happen because the Knicks won two of the first five. They won in 71 and 73, which again Phil Jackson was playing basketball, so that you know tells you all you need to know about that. But you had situations where there's never been as much parity in the NBA. But back to my Oklahoma City point, I dismissed them. But I dismissed them from shorthand, and I want to apologize to them. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is a top three player in the NBA, top five at the worst. I'm going to say top three. I think he's in that Jokic, Giannis, Shai, kind of that's the argument for best player in the world right now. I can't really make a Luka argument right now. Tatum's blew his Achilles out. Can't make a Tatum argument. I just seen Anthony Edwards in the playoffs. I can't make an argument. So to me, those three players are the best players in the NBA. And if I'm missing somebody, I apologize. But those three, to me, are the best three right now. It's Shai, it's Jokic, and Giannis. Those were the top three in the MVP race. And I think, honestly, as far as best player in the world, I think you just kind of just move Shai to three. I think Jokic is the best player. I think Giannis is right next to him. I think Shai is right after him. And no shade to Shai at all, being the third best player in the world. It's just Jokic, to me, is clear-cut number one. Your argument is Giannis. Shai and Giannis kind of do similar, and Giannis is bigger, faster, and stronger. Shai has a better jumper. Giannis is that much better going to the goal. Defensively, it's Giannis. Ball handling is Shai. rebounding, it's Giannis. So, I'm saying, so it's one of those situations where you're splitting hairs there. I'm going to go with the bigger, stronger athlete being the better player. It's like when LeBron and Kobe were battling for best player. They were what talent-wise to me for most of their, from like their primes overlapped a little bit. LeBron hit like in 06 to 2012, and that was kind of the tail end of Kobe's prime. But to me, LeBron was the better player, but he also the bigger, faster, stronger player. So if it came down to it was close, I'm going to go with the bigger, faster, stronger player. This is why I put Giannis over Shea. But Shea's, let's say, the third best player in the world. The All-NBA teams came out. And lo and behold, sitting there on third team All-NBA is none other than Thunder Wing Jalen Williams, a.k.a. J-Dub. Well, that's interesting. Because that means he has an argument as a top 10 player in the NBA. Ooh, but Justin, what do you mean? He was third team, not second team. I agree. And the All-NBA teams are, the All-NBA teams themselves are non-positional. It's not the old days where you had to have two guards, two fours, and a center. Now, granted, it kind of worked out that way. Because if you look at the first team, you have Shea, Donovan Mitchell, your guards, Tatum, Giannis, your wing, Jokic, your center. Your second team is Brunson and Curry as your guards. You can make the argument for Ant and LeBron to be your forwards, even though Ant's on here as a guard. Mobley is your center. Your third team is where it gets off, because you really can't make an argument for a forward on the third team. However, J-Dub sits at third team All-NBA, which means he's potentially the 11th best player in the NBA. And if I can make an argument for you being 11, I can make an argument for you being 10. So if I look at J-Dub and I look at, let's say, LeBron James. Currently, who is, no, I'm not going to make the LeBron James argument. Evan Mobley. I get Evan Mobley was the POY. I totally understand that. But if I had to pick a starter, if I was starting a team and my argument was J-Dub or Evan Mobley, who am I going to select? Personally, I'm going to pick J-Dub. And that's the only thing I got to do. I just got to get one person out the team. I would make an argument that J-Dub is a better basketball player right this second than Evan Mobley, which means that J-Dub would qualify based on the All-NBA teams, which is what people look at, All-NBA and All-Pro. In the NFL All-Pro instead of the Pro Bowl, NBA, it's All-NBA instead of the All-Star game. I would look at, right this second, J-Dub being the better player than Evan Mobley, which means J-Dub, based on the All-NBA teams, would have an argument for being a top 10 player in the NBA, which means my history that I spoke about before, over the last, since the NBA-ABA merger, you need either the best player, two of the top 10, and three of the top 25 to win an NBA title. That is what it has happened in the NBA since the NBA-ABA merger. And as I would say, the NBA-ABA merger, worst come to worst, 1979. It's been disproven one time since 1979. That was the Pistons. This team, the Oklahoma City Thunder, fits in that title. Shea's 3 and J-Dub's 10. You have two of the top 10 players. And if we can use the logic that Dirk became the best player after his title run, I can use the argument that J-Dub can become the 10th best player after his finals run. And that's all I need for my history to say correct. So, Oklahoma City Thunder, welcome to the NBA Championship House. Welcome, welcome, welcome. You've been cordially invited to your seat at the NBA Championship House as a team to qualify for the ability to win a title for two of the best 10 players in the league at the time you won your title. Congratulations to the Thunder. But, of course, they beat the Minnesota Timberwolves, a team that many people thought were going to be a team that was going to potentially, Anthony Edwards elevates himself to the face of the league off this. elevate himself to where, you know, he's the guy. I think if he won, people were going to say he was the best player in the world. Hard to argue it. But he didn't. Came up short. Had some bad games. Had games where the relentlessness at Oklahoma City defense, the Caruso, the Cason Wallaces, the Lou Dortz, the Shea Gibbs Alexanders, the Nikhil Alexander Walkers, and I'm sure the J Dubs of the world. And then you get past them and Chet and Hartenstein are sitting at the rim. So that's no fun, right? But this relentlessness is Oklahoma City defense. This relentlessness of that team, I don't think it tapped Anthony Edwards out. I think it wore Anthony Edwards down. Because you got into where you're playing every other day. So they beat you to smithereens for 48 minutes on Tuesday. You'd rest, recuperate, and rehab on Wednesday. And guess what? On Thursday, they're beating you to smithereens again. Like, your body didn't have a usual turnaround of playing maybe a softer defense or taking that game off or something of that nature where, you know, you kind of get relief because they weren't releasing. And I think Minnesota needs to go make a move. But speaking of Minnesota, what's next for them? They have no room in the front in their first apron for their next season. They have about $925,000 available for next season under the first apron. If they were, now they have their full second apron. They have $12.9 million for their second apron. They have their full second apron as of now. So as we sit, you know, with no moves being made, they have still have $12.8 million under the second apron. Now, if they were to make a move, they have two player option contracts. They have Julius Randle and they have Naz Reid. Julius Randle's at about $31 million. Naz Reid's at about $15 million. If you want to take a swing at a superstar, that is what you would package. You would package probably Randle and salary cap filler. I'm thinking the Randle. Jesus, your contracts are top heavy. Because in my opinion, you wouldn't want to move DiVincenzo. He's making $12 million a year as a 3-and-D player. You're not moving Rod Dillingham. No one's going to want Terrence Shannon. And my brain is like Kevin Durant. It's what I think my brain is thinking. Maybe not Kevin Durant, but a person similar to Kevin Durant. Maybe a star who's looking to move on. You take Julius Randle, make a $31 million. You move him in a signing trade or extending trade, whatever, in a deal. You pick up a Kevin Durant. I think KD's going to get moved this offseason. And I think that would be the person that you would look for if you are Minnesota in order to try and make the next step. Because to me, you're going to need two things to make a run next season. The Lakers are going to be better. I'm going to be the bearer of bad news. The Lakers are going to be better. They're going to get a center, either via draft or via trade. There's multiple trade centers out there available. They're going to get a center. They're probably going to get two. They're probably going to get one that's pretty solid, and they're probably going to get one that's rotational. And then guess what they're going to do? They're going to do it by keeping Austin Reeves. Try to be the bearer of bad news. That's what's going to happen. They're going to be able to keep Austin Reeves. Again, really wish that wasn't the case. Really wish I could, you know, tell people that, oh, the Lakers are going to have to trade half their roster to get a decent center. They're not. They're going to do it by keeping Austin Reeves, LeBron, and Luka. And they're going to do it, and they're going to get a center. Cool. All right, so, because I'm looking at the 25-26, LeBron, Luka, Rui, Dorian Finney-Smith. So I'm looking at LeBron and Luka are untouchable. Reeves is just, the money's too easy. He has a player option for 26-27, but he's going to decline and go to true unrestricted free agency. The money's too easy, right? Rui Hachimura is making $18.3 million as a Laker. That's going to get traded to me for a good center. Clint Capella, someone like that. Maybe not Clint Capella literally, but someone like that. And then Dorian Finney-Smith, to me, $15.3 million. If he accepts it, he's going to get traded as well. Vanderbilt's making 11.5. Vince is making 11.5. Cleveland's making 11. Like, people are going to get moved, right? I mean, you're already willing to move Dalton Connect. So the Lakers are going to get better. The Pelicans are going to get better. Why? The Pelicans can't get worse. Right? Like, the Pelicans can't get worse. They're going to get better. The Houston Rockets are going to get better. I think Houston's going to land Kevin Durant. Right? I think Houston's going to land KD. That's just me. That's my opinion. I have no sourcing on that. I just think Houston's going to land Kevin Durant. And I'm just looking at the way moves were made, and Houston owns Phoenix's draft, and Phoenix is going to get bad, and blah, blah, blah. I also think Giannis could end up in San Antonio, which means San Antonio is going to be really good. I don't think Cooper Flagg is going to be a day one superstar in Dallas, but Kyrie is probably going to come back around Christmas. If he's fully ready to go by, let's say, Valentine's Day, it's him, it's Cooper Flagg, it's Anthony Davis, it's those bigs there. They got a couple shooters. That could be a good team as well. Nuggets aren't going anywhere at all because they have the ability, they have their coach in place, they can maneuver some contracts as well. What I'm saying is, Minnesota, in order to compete, you're going to have to go make a move. The Clippers aren't going anywhere either, in my opinion. Ballmer's not going to allow it. So you're going to have to go make a move. You're the Clippers, in my opinion, in order to make a big swing. That's it. In order to make a big step, got to make a move. Staring at Julius Randle's contract, staring at Jaden McDaniels' $25 million contract. I'm staring at Naz Reid's 15, DiVincenzo's 12. I don't think Conley's going to get moved, but if I had to make a bet, I think your sweet spot is Randle's 31 expiring, Jaden McDaniels 25, Naz Reid's 15 expiring, and DiVincenzo's 12. Is the contract I would look to package, make moves, swing. Okay. And then Anthony Edwards has to step up. He was getting his crown fitted for the best player in the world, and it broke. And I think Anthony Edwards, he's going to get a reputation now as a legend killer, but he gets beat by his peers. So remember last year's playoffs, he swept out the Phoenix Suns, Kevin Durant. He put the Grim Reaper's strength in his mantle. And then Luka got him. Right? And then this year, he beats LeBron and Luka. He gets payback on Luka. He beats LeBron and Luka. He takes the crown, the broken crown, sat in his house. You know? Then he goes to the Warriors, and hell, Steph got hurt. Who cares? He takes the Warriors, he puts it in his house. And then Shai Gilgeous-Alexander says, thank you, but go home now. And he loses to another one of his peers. At a certain point, losing to your peers is going to become unacceptable. And I think that he has a great reputation. I think that he's earned his reputation. I think he is a guy that has earned the right to have the reputation of a legend killer. He's killed 3 legends. He's LeBron. He's knocked out LeBron, Steph, and KD in 2 consecutive playoffs. He has a right to walk around as a legend killer. But he's losing to his peers. He has no Western Conference title. Shai does. Luka does. He has no finals appearances. He has no MVPs. I don't think he's ever been first team all NBA. I think his reputation is out preceding his play right now. And I think he's going to need to fix that before the Timberwolves are able to make the next step. But on a series that's still going, and I won't spend a ton of time on it, but the Eastern Conference playoffs is still going. Shout out to the New York Knicks for absolutely blowing out blowing out the Indiana Pacers last night as they were up Schitt's Creek without a paddle. And they survived. They smacked the Indiana Pacers last night. And the Pacers came out with a team that looked like they wanted to end the game quickly. But they also kind of played quarters 2 through 3, to me, as if they were comfortable going home. Right? And Oklahoma City kind of played that with Oklahoma City, crazy enough, played with a desperation game 4 to go home. We're going to play so hard, so fast, so physical in game 4 that we're going to basically break up mentally for game 5. We're going to run away with it in game 5. Indiana played like, okay, if we win it here, great. But if we don't, we go back to our building. It's a dangerous game. It's a dangerous game because I always look, and my reference point is always 3-1 comebacks. That team that has that one game to win, and every 3-1 comeback has a hinge game where either you have to go on the road or, you know what I'm saying, you have to win that pressure-packed home game. It's usually the game six. Game six is the hardest one of 3-1 comebacks to me. If you can get game six, oh, it's on probably in game seven. So, for instance, with the Knicks, they weren't going to lose at home, right? That was not happening. So then the biggest game is game six, because if you go back into that building for game seven and you tell the city of New York and those Knicks players they have to win one home game for the NBA Finals to be back in New York for the first time since 2000 or 1999, you're not going to win that game for the Pacers. You're just not. That's going to be an environment unlike any environment in the NBA. Oklahoma City's crazy. The Garden is insane. You know what I'm saying? That's why I want to see that finals personally, because it's too crazy. Now, Indiana's going to be wild, right? But the Garden is like the Mecca on steroids. It's called the Mecca of basketball. And then Oklahoma City is going to be like the greatest college team ever, which it may not be, because their average price right now is like $6.17 to get in for games. So they may not have their normal collegiate feel, because a lot of their fans, those fans that go crazy in their college style fans, probably can't afford to get into the game. So that's a whole different conversation there. But they have the crazy college style environment as the only pro team in Oklahoma. And then the Garden would be just, I don't even know what to describe the Garden sometimes. It's loud, it's raucous, it's loud drunk men in suits going crazy. It's the weirdest thing ever, but it works for them and it's amazing. And so that'd be two crazy environments. But again, Indiana, if you want to win this series, Tyrese Halliburton, Miles Turner, Benedict Mathurin, Aaron Nesmith, TJ McConnell, Rick Carlisle, the head coach, like if you want to win the NBA, if you want a chance at the NBA Finals, you have to win game six. You're not going to win game seven in the Garden. And if you're the Knicks, to me, all you got to do is win game six. You get it back in that Garden, that first 10-2 run in the first quarter to go up 10, the game's over. Now, Indiana's the comeback kids. They're the kids of the comeback. They've been figuring it out all playoffs. But I think mentally, that's going to be a pressure. The entire state of New York is going to be on the back of the Indiana Pacers, riding them with the weight of the state of Indiana on their chest. And that's going to be a lot to overcome. Every miss, every turnover, every blocked shot, every, you know, three you give up, it's going to feel like a bomb's going off. And that's just a brutal way. That's a brutal path trying to get to the finals. But up next, prediction. Sorry, I forgot. Prediction. I predict that the Knicks come back. I think the Knicks pull out 3-1 comeback and they play the Oklahoma City Thunder. We'll have another show after the series is over to discuss the NBA Finals. But I do predict right now that the Knicks will come back and win the Eastern Conference, and we'll have Oklahoma City and the Knicks in the Finals. But up next, we're going to talk about the WNBA, what's going down with the W. Welcome back into the show, and now we're going to talk about the WNBA and what's happening there. It won't be a lot of chatter here, just to look some quick hits Just from what I've been noticing going down the league. So, of course, Caitlin Clark is injured. She has a left quad strain. She's out 2 weeks at least. The Indiana Fever has lost their only game without her, although it was close, although several season highs were made. So I think not having an ecosystem is going to allow some of those players to play their more natural game. Like, DeWanna Bonner's a scorer. She's one of those, you know, she hits you for 15 to 18 points a night. She went 21, and she hasn't got anywhere near that when she's playing with Caitlin Clark. And I think playing with such an ecosystem-style player makes people play off that person to when, even when that person's not there, as far as, like, subbed out, they still are kind of looking for the ecosystem. So, like, what Dallas has going on, you know, I just watched them play, so I'll speak on them. I watched them play last night versus Chicago Sky. Dallas has a bad tendency of watching Arike Ogunbowale and just trying to screen for Paige Bueckers. So the Dallas wings, and that's the problem with the way the WNBA season set up, that the Dallas wings didn't have a 2-3 month training camp. So it wasn't like, you know, because Paige was in college 2 months ago. You know what I'm saying? Paige was winning the college Dallas championship 2 months ago. And, you know, Arike Ogunbowale, I believe, was overseas. No, she was in Unrivaled. So in the list of Smith and et cetera. But, you know, so the two main players on the team, one was in Unrivaled, one was in college basketball. It's not like the NBA where a player gets drafted, you know, in July, June, July-ish, July, and they don't play their first game until October. But they've got to have rookie camp. They're going to have the summer league, rookie camp, mini camp, training camp, basketball. Before they play one real game, they're going to have 2 to 3 to 4 months in the organization, working with the staff, working with the coaches, working on the training, working with the players. They're going to meet somewhere in the summertime, play pickup runs together. They used to play with each other, and et cetera. And that's not going to happen in the W. Now, I think next year they're going to look a lot better. But you always see teams in the W, especially, like I said, Dallas. Arike Ogunbowale started going ballistic. She dropped 37, most of it in the last in the second half. She's going absolutely ballistic. Every time she touched the ball, it was one screen, and people just stood there. And she shot the ball. Paige Bueckers gets it, and it's more movement, but it's moving. I feel like everybody's setting her a screen. It looks like everybody was screening for her. Lisa Smith came and set a screen. I think Ogunbowale did, like, a bluff screen. Somebody else came and did a screen. Like, I don't know if that's coaching or what, but it feels like when you have that one good ball handler in high school basketball and everybody else trying to get him free or get her free, that's what it felt like. It felt like, okay, well, Arike is going off. She's going to do her thing if she gets it. But while Paige has it, we're going to just try to get her free for a bucket. And it's like, it was very, very AAU-ish, very high school basketball-ish. I think when Chicago and Tyler Marsh, Chicago's head coach, kind of figured out what was going on, he kind of just made her force. He made her get the ball up on the screen. Because at that point, you weren't really looking to score your own. You were looking to screen for Paige to get her open, either to spoon feed you for a layup or to shoot a jumper herself. And like I said, with Arike going off, it made you to people watch Arike shoot the ball. So that was pretty interesting there. On the other side, oh, and Paige Bueckers is doing things that was a lot better than Caitlin Clark's doing them. I'm going to be the person that just say that. Statistically, sorry. She is definitely the best player, best rookie we've seen start. Now, Caitlin Clark had the explosive plays. She had the 35-foot bombs, etc. But Paige Bueckers, people forget, in that famous class of 2020, that high school class, Paige was the best player in the class. She's the reason why Caitlin Clark didn't go to UConn. So she's always been the person that we didn't, the person that was kept just a little bit better than Caitlin Clark, right? And it was never a massive chasm, but she's always been just a little bit better. So at this current juncture during her rookie year, she's better at this point in her rookie year than Caitlin Clark was. I'm not shading Caitlin Clark. It's just the truth. Again, Caitlin had the fanfare and Caitlin had the 30-foot bombs and so on and so forth. Paige right now is a little bit of a better player. At this stage in their careers, and, you know, 1 year ago for Caitlin, because Caitlin really picked up in the second half of the season. And then a couple of personnel notes. A couple of personnel notes. Nafisa Collier might be the best player in the world. Minnesota links forward. Nafisa Collier might be the best player in the world. She's insane. And I pushed back on it, and I said Asia Wilson. It might be Fee. Fee might be the best player in the world. She is ridiculous. I mean, her numbers are insane this season. She's looking like a player who I know I'm the best player in the world, and I'm going to play like I'm the best player in the world. And when a player begins to do that, it makes it hard to be to beat them. I mean, right now she's averaging 20. Right now, Fee is averaging 26.8 points a game, 8 rebounds a game, 3 assists, 2.5 steals. I mean, and she's doing this. I mean, it's only through 5 games so far, but she's doing this along with 1.5 blocks on 52% shooting from the field, 44% from 3, 94% from the free throw line. I mean, she's playing like she's the best player in the world. Kudos to her. And my personal best player in the world, Asia Wilson, I think it's time for her to move on from Vegas, or she needs to do a lot of demanding of Las Vegas. I don't think the team is built around her to succeed at the maximum level that she needs to succeed at right now. I think that they're gelling. Again, they don't have the situation like the NBA is happening. So I think right now she's going to look at potentially other opportunities, maybe in this offseason, if this season were to continue to go the way it is. I think they're very, very her dependent in the league with so much talent. And they have talent. They have Chelsea Gray. They have Jackie Young. They have Jewel Lloyd. They have talent around her. I just think that currently the mix isn't mixing as best as it could. And therefore, I think it may be a situation where now the rumor mill has started. Is this Asia's last run with Vegas? Will she move on after this season? The rumor mill has started. Personally, I say no. I don't think she moves on. I think there's maybe wholesale changes if the season were to continue to go the way it goes. But I don't think she moves on. Ultimately, I think the Aces get it fixed. I believe too much in those 4 players I named, along with head coach Becky Hammon, to just kind of throw the season down the toilet, especially, 6 games in. I think it's too early to make any massive judgments or massive decisions. Again, it's early. It's a 40-game season. They're on game like 5 or 6. So I think it's very early in order to just make a wholesale change. Oh, she's gone. But I do think it's something to discuss. I do think it's something to keep an eye on as this season progresses. But up next, in our best for last, we're going to have a quick chat about College Football 26. Welcome back into the show, and now we're going to have our best for last, which is going to be a discussion on CFB 26. EA College Football 26 has been released, and the trailer for it looks amazing. There's dynamic lighting. So one of the big things people complain about was that night games and day games kind of felt the same, right? And it's not one of those things you really notice until, like, it rained. So I know, like, when the game first came out, and it was, they said it when the 25 came out, it was a base game. It was the smallest game on the market, pretty much. It was half the size of a Madden, a third of the size of a 2K. You know, like, it was really was just a good base game. But one of the things I noticed almost immediately when I played it was that lighting kind of felt the same. And lighting is not something you notice until it's bad. And I remember playing in the Superdome, Sugar Bowl game, playing in the Superdome, and it was so bright. I remember going, oh my God, like, I've been in the Superdome, it's not this bright. It was so bright, it was ridiculous. Now, they ended up updating it and toning it down, etc. But lighting was something that was an issue And then they listen to community notes big time on this. And I'm going to get into all this a lot more in Nerdology or on the Nerdology show with CL Smooth Gaming. And that'll be tonight. So then make sure you tune into that whenever that is released. I think he live streams it, actually. So tune in. I'll definitely make sure to put it on social media whenever it's aired. But there's 2,800 new plays. There's unique schemes like Rice's Modern Option or Penn State's Gadget Heavy. And the Gadget Heavy options went like they were putting like offensive linemen were at receiver. Tyler Warren was at O-line. Tyler Warren was slipping out, but the O-linemen were like it was. They do all kinds of weird stuff. Anyway, there's 300 coaches. 300 real world coaches. So, and when the number came out, like 300, that's not 300 Division I teams. There isn't. There's 112, I think, FBS teams. Not every coach is in there. Not every head coach is in there. For instance, nobody in Colorado staff is in. Nobody in North Carolina staff is in. Deion and Belichick both said no. However, a lot of schools have at least their head coach. Most have both coordinators. So it was interesting with LSU, for instance, they went Joe Sloan because he's really OC. Cortez Hankins like the co-OC. Blake Baker is the DC and Brian Kelly is the head coach. They're all in. Ohio State staff is in. So that's going to make it interesting in terms of dynasty mode. So let's say you're a dynasty team and you have a school and your OC, let's say I pick LSU, for instance. My HC, let's say Joe Sloan leaves and goes to be the head coach at Oregon State. Because Oregon State only has their head coach in. But let's say it would be the head coach of Oregon State. And then Dan, Ohio State tanks for some reason. Dan, what's his name? Can't think of his name at Ohio State right now. But let's say Dan Lanning gets fired at Oregon. I can bring in Dan Lanning as my DC at LSU. Like, that's pretty cool, right? And that's something that I hope they do. Because it's not something that was done in Madden. Madden never had the coordinators in. So if your head coach got fired, if you wanted that coach, you had to fire your head coach to get that head coach. But NBA 2K does that where, like, Taylor Jenkins gets fired from the Grizzlies. I can have Taylor Jenkins as my lead assistant coach. And he's on my bench now. So that, you know, that's pretty cool. They've updated the wear and tear. They've done way more stuff to the tackling. Home field advantage is supposed to be insane. They've also added a lot more game day stuff. In the trailer, they showed Clemson getting off the bus, which is something that is what they really do. They get off the bus and then they run down the hill. They do a lap around the stadium in the buses and then they run down the hill. In the game 25, they just ran down the hill. Crossplay in dynasty mode is going to be wild. Road to glory, apparently, you can like do stuff like throw the hat, you can commit and decommit. And then team builder from 25 is translating over into 26. So I know me personally, I'm a Southeastern alum. Of course, we're not in the game yet. I'm also an LSU alum. We are in the game. But as a Southeastern alum, I built Southeastern from scratch. Now, I took some liberties with uniforms. I took some liberties with stadium. But I built them from scratch. So I'm actually going to probably go back in now that I know that we're translating into 26. And you can do team builder offline 26. I'm probably going to end up redoing them and just changing the stadium because right now I'm in Georgia Tech Stadium and stuff like that. But without getting too many details, and I'll get into more details on Nerdology, with, like I said, with CL Smooth Gaming tonight. So make sure you guys tune in for that. But that is all I have for today. Covered a wide range of topics. Wasn't supposed to have any football in it. Broke news in football. And then with the NBA, WNBA, and CFB 26. Again, tune into Nerdology tonight with CL Smooth Gaming. I will be on there along with Jai, who you guys see from the JTS After Dark show. He will be on there as well at some point. Don't know if he's going to be there at the beginning, but he will be on there at some point. I will be on there for at least the CFB 26 segment. But that is all I have for today. This is your host, Justin Jackson, signing out.